Doc Smo here. Welcome. You want to see a parent get excited? Well, just bring up the topic of bedwetting with a mom of an 8-year-old bedwetter and stand back. Bedwetting creates a lot of stress in both the parents of the bedwetter and the bedwetting child themselves. When families first bring up this issue with their pediatricians, most parents fear there is something wrong with their child. Well, in most cases, this simply is not true. And parents also think that their child's bedwetting emanates from something being wrong with the child's urinary bladder. Well, this is also not true in most cases. So I thought it would be useful, especially if you have a bedwetter in your house, to put some of these misconceptions to bed, so to speak. Pun intended. And getting better understanding of the cause, the natural history, and treatment options that are useful. If you have been wondering, why does my child wet the bed? You've come to the right place to get the answer. Stay tuned, and I will answer that question for you.
It's Paul Smolin, MD, your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions. He has answers. It's portable, practical pediatrics on your schedule. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Well, longtime listeners of Portable Practical Pediatrics know I love to take my listeners to a place that I call Science Drive, so we can talk numbers, chemistry, and various other scientific concepts you learned in science class. Refreshing you on a few scientific concepts will bring you an understanding of our topic today. So hang with me for a few minutes while we go over some science concepts you need to understand to get an understanding of why your child is wetting the bed. Concept number one, your child's kidneys filter waste out of their blood and continuously make urine 24/7, even though they only eliminate that urine about every 3 hours. Urine production is constant and predictable at a rate of about 1 to 2 milliliters per kilogram per hour. But urine elimination only happens every 3 hours or so during the day. Nighttime is an entirely different beast. Let's do some simple math. That means that a 19-kilogram, that's a 42-pound, 4-year-old, makes about 285 milliliters, which is 9.5 ounces of urine, if they sleep for 10 hours. Unfortunately, most 4-year-olds only have 8-ounce bladders, not large enough to hold 9.5 ounces. Well, you can see that this child and their parents have a problem. Too much urine and too small a bladder to hold a night's worth of urine. If this child doesn't wake up and go to the bathroom before morning, the bed is likely to be wet by the morning. It's simple geometry. 9.5 ounces of urine to store in an 8-ounce bladder. See the chart that I have created to check your child's nighttime urine numbers and better understand what your child is up against. Some will have large enough bladders to hold a night's worth of urine, but many will not and are destined to be bedwetters unless they can wake and use the bathroom. Interestingly, during childhood, girls have larger bladders than boys. Could this be why fewer girls are bedwetters than boys? Probably. Concept number two. There are two levels of control of your child's bladder. At the spinal cord level, where bladder emptying is an involuntary, that means the child has no control, and at the upper brain level, the consciously controlled part of the brain, where an awake child can run the show. Infants have no upper brain control of their bladders, and their bladders empty reflexly every few hours due to their strong spinal cord reflex. Hence, those diaper changes every 3 to 4 hours. toddlers and school-age children learn to control and suppress the bladder-emptying reflex while they're awake, but cannot when they're asleep. Fortunately, most children begin to develop the skill of waking at night and using the bathroom, if necessary, between 7 and 10 years of age, some earlier and some later, as you are well aware. As a child becomes older, they have two things going for them. They tend to sleep less hours at night than they did when they were very young, meaning less urine to store in their bladders. And their urinary bladders are getting progressively larger. And when they get a bladder large enough to hold a night's worth of urine, especially if they can wake and use the bathroom before that spinal cord reflex takes over and empties their bladder early in the morning, their nocturnal enuresis or bedwetting days are over. Hallelujah. Concept number 3. Remember, your child is a living, breathing, constantly adjusting being, not a simple machine. By that I mean your child's bodily functions are in constant flux, changing and adapting to environmental stresses. It turns out that many of these environmental stresses affect your child's rate of urine production, as well as your child's ability to wake and deal with a full bladder during their sleep. Well, here are just a few situations to illustrate what I mean. We know that urine production can increase just before and during common illnesses. In order to remove an increased amount of chemical waste your sick child is producing during their sickness. If your child has consumed caffeine, that are in things like sodas, teas, coffees, and chocolate, this will also increase their urine production since caffeine is a diuretic. It promotes urine production. And urine production also increases when your child simply has a lot to drink or has consumed foods that contain a lot of water. Additionally, we know that if your child is particularly anxious or overtired, their ability to wake up and use the potty isn't very good. All these situations make staying dry at night more difficult at times, even if they have been mostly dry in the past. Hopefully, you now have a better understanding of why intermittently your child may wet. Well, let's define this bedwetting issue a little more precisely. Doctors don't start using the term bedwetting until a child is at least 5 years of age, since nocturnal bedwetting, also called enuresis, before this age is extremely common and actually considered normal. If the child has never had a 6-month period of night dryness and is above the age of 5 years, doctors call their bedwetting primary nocturnal enuresis. That's bedwetting at night. If a child over the age of 5 years has achieved a period of dryness for at least 6 months and then begins wetting again, pediatricians term this condition secondary nocturnal enuresis. Now, it's important to note that with secondary enuresis, an underlying medical cause of the nighttime wetting is more likely than it is in a primary enuretic. And finally, a child with urinary accidents during the day, that's termed daytime enuresis. Okay, so now you know the lingo, but how common is bedwetting? Well, I just told you that we don't even start using the term nocturnal bedwetting or enuresis until a child reaches their 5th birthday, since this situation is so common in the under 5-year-olds as to be considered normal. Well, here are the percentages of children who bedwet broken down by age. 5-year-olds, 25%. By age 12, we're down to 8%. Teenagers, we're down to 3%, and believe it or not, some adults wet the bed, and it's estimated to be about 1% of the adult population wet the bed. Well, you can see that the older a child gets, the better the chance they have of outgrowing bedwetting, but there are a small percentage of adults who still wet the bed. But Doc Smo, does my child need to see the pediatrician if they're bedwetter? Well, if you have a child who regularly wets the bed and they have reached school age, you probably should discuss this with your child's pediatrician, especially if they're over the age of 6 years. While uncommon, there are a number of medical conditions that can manifest as bedwetting. Expect that after your child's pediatrician takes a good history focused on discovering significant health problems, they will likely check your child's urine looking for signs of a urinary infection or diabetes. They will also do a physical exam with particular attention, noting signs of spinal cord problems. Remember, part of the control mechanism of your child's urinary bladder involves the child's lower spinal cord. Your child's doctor will be paying close attention to signs of problems in your child's lower body, such as birthmarks located over their lower spine, stiffness in their legs, toe walking, poor coordination of their legs, or altered muscle reflexes. The chances are that nothing will be found, but these things need to be checked. If your child's urine and examination are normal, their pediatrician will simply reassure you that your child will, quote, outgrow this problem, end of quote, which they almost always do. Remember, in most children, bedwetting is not a disease, but rather a storage problem along with a developmental immaturity. Okay, so let's get down to what treatments are available for bedwetting. Well, parents who have children who bedwet often feel that their child needs, quote, treatment, end of quote, for this condition. The truth is that doing nothing other than making sure that their bedwetting is not a sign of a bigger physical problem is all that is necessary for most kids. Time will cure their bedwetting at night, as you saw by those statistics I gave you a few minutes ago. But if your child is getting frustrated and the wetting is limiting their sleeping at friends' homes or going to camp, here are some things you can try. Restrict after 6 p.m. and getting your child up before you go to bed and encouraging your child to urinate can be very helpful for some children. Some physicians advocate trying a food elimination diet, thinking that some foods irritate a child's bladder. Well, I have not found this to be very helpful, however, and I don't recommend this. Providing them with pull-ups that they can discreetly use at night. Now, I don't believe that using these pull-ups slows down a child's ability to learn to stay dry at night, and their use is definitely good news for whoever is doing the laundry in the house. Some pediatricians also believe that doing bladder stretching exercises can be helpful. But I have to say, I'm not a big fan of these either. But if you want to learn more about how to do bladder stretching exercises, check out the link in my show notes. Making sure that your child is not constipated can help bedwetters, since bladder function and capacity and colon health are closely related. These organs are next-door neighbors in your child's tummy, and the size of one affects the other. Remember how often you had to go to the bathroom when you were in late pregnancy? Whether it's a large distended uterus or a large colon packed with poop pushing on the urinary bladder, the result can be the same: a urinary bladder with less capacity to store urine. Well, some parents have found that bedwetting alarm systems that can train your little bedwetter to wake up at the moment of the bedwetting begins to be very useful. There are a number of these systems available, and the manufacturers claim they work after a few months of use in about 70% of children. Well, my experience tells me otherwise, but in some children, they can be very helpful. And finally, there are a number of medications that are used to prevent bedwetting, the safest and probably most effective of which is something called DDAVP. It comes as a nasal spray or as a tablet and is used in the evening on nights that the family chooses. It is only available by prescription. Chronic daily use of DDAVP is not often done, but rather the enuretic child uses the DDAVP for camp, or sleepovers, or vacations that include travel. It's great for intermittent use. In my experience, DDAVP works well, is safe, and very well tolerated. So let's sum up what we've learned today. Here is what I want you to remember about bedwetting in children. While possible, rarely is bedwetting a sign of a serious physical disorder. If your child is 7 years or older and still wets regularly, or if they have stopped wetting and then restart after 6 months of being dry, a visit to your pediatrician is warranted to make sure the wetting isn't a sign of illness. The true cause of bedwetting emanates from a child's inability to hold a night's worth of urine and their inability to wake during sleep to use the bathroom. Treatment of bedwetting is usually not necessary, since time and maturation usually resolve the bedwetting problem. If a child and their family do want treatment, bedwetting alarm systems and a medication called DDAVP are safe options to try. Well, that wraps up this edition of Portable Practical Pediatrics. If you enjoy exploring topics about child health, by all means, subscribe to this podcast at www.docsmo.com and consider writing a short review on iTunes or at the docsmo.com Facebook page. By doing so, you're helping other parents to find my blog and my podcast. This is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin, remembering that if your child frequently wakes up wet, there is no reason to fret. Until next time. I would like to thank the following people for their assistance in the production of this podcast. Dr. David Jaffe, the voice of the introduction. Robert Beezer, the composer-arranger of the intro music. Ann Gesner, my wonderful content editor. Benjamin Smolin and Jerome Moof, the talented musicians who produced this delightful theme music. Sarah Smolin and Nathaniel Horlick for their digital wizardry. And Wendy Smolin Esquire and Seth, the Rocket Man Barrister Jaffe, for their inspirational guidance. Thanks, guys.
By listening to this PEDcast, you agree to all of the terms and conditions found at the docsmo.com website. This docsmo.com PEDcast is informational only. Dr. Smolin does not diagnose, treat, or offer specific medical advice for your child. For specific medical advice regarding your child, consult his or her healthcare provider.